overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Have a beautiful week.
Thank you. You can feel the vibration of that, can't you? You know, that's a Karen Drucker song. She's one of my dear friends, and she does her workshops all over the world, and that's her primary focus, is to learn to be gentle with ourselves and to only go as fast as the slowest part of me is willing to go. Could we approach life that way instead of this dog-eat-dog, I got to do this, I got to get somewhere, I've got to achieve something, to really just be gentle, to just show up for the moment. You know, I have a very, very gentle dog named Bert, and when you give him a cookie, he goes like this. And he gently takes it out with his lips. Now, Humphrey, on the other hand, takes off your fingers when you hand him the cookie. He doesn't know what gentle means. But Bert lives in gentle. And so now the way we teach them, Trey does, we had baby Speck. She used to grab the bone, too. Trey would say, gentle, gentle. And after a while, gentle would take the bone. What if we could train ourselves to be gentle with ourselves? You know, I looked at the marquee out here, and I saw what I'm speaking about, understanding the weave. Isn't so much of life, as they say, with all you're getting, get understanding? Could we understand how we're supposed to be in this world with ourselves, with each other? We learn it with our pups and our cats, to be gentle with them. Could we do the same to our little self? You know, so everything is an opportunity, is an opening for a deepening, for a healing. And I love our revealing services. They're called revealing services because Dr. Ernest Holmes says there's really nothing to heal. There's only this wholeness to be revealed. So what if our true nature is wholeness? Thomas Merton, the great mystic, said there is a hidden wholeness within all creation. So the wholeness is hidden under the appearance of dis-ease, discord, suffering. And of course, Buddha taught that all life is suffering and that suffering is a given for all of us in this life. And Buddha also taught that most suffering is optional. Anybody know what optional suffering is? Optional suffering is when you choose to suffer. But suffering is a part of life, you know? And so could we be gentle when those moments of suffering, when those moments of attachment, when those moments of aversion, when those moments of resistance come up in us and we notice that there is a pattern that's rather unskillful and we own that pattern? That's basically science of mind 101. You name it, you claim it, you own it, and then you can release it. But you can't really release it. It releases you when you no longer identify with it. It's kind of counterintuitive. When I no longer identify with my addiction, with my struggle, with whatever it is that's creating that suffering, it has a way of letting go of us. You know, this beautiful young lady, she said, I'm a recovering evangelist and a Republican over here. She came to us for the first time. Sometimes you have to leave the religion of your ancestors because it feels too tight, too constraining. I have mentioned what I'm going to be teaching in September is going to be the work of Richard Rohr. He's a Franciscan monk who's a mystic. He's been a monk for 49 years. He's 76 years old. And beautiful Al Underbrink sent me a video of him, or it was an audio, being interviewed on Super Soul something or other with Oprah and Richard Rohr. And she said, I heard that you have cancer. He said, oh yeah, but let's not go there. And you had a heart attack last year? Oh yeah, but let's not go there. Wow, he's not going to go into that path of suffering. He said, if anything, that heart attack made me so more present with life, and I live with this grateful heart. And he said, I finally wrote one of his seminal works. It's called The Universal Christ. And in the very first chapter, my evangelical will appreciate this, he said most religions are what he calls kindergarten religions. They don't recognize that Christ was not his last name. And he says, the Christ is this awakened consciousness that is within all creation, and it has to become universal. So it's the Christification of the human species that Jesus was pointing toward, not about worshiping the individual. So then Oprah, in her kind of confrontive, sort of interrogative way, she said, so what does it mean, John 3:16, when it says, I am the way, the truth, and the life? How would you respond to that, Father Rohr? And he says, well,
He says they've used it for all the wrong ways. Jesus would never say, I am myself in the way. He was saying that the Christ is the way. The awakened consciousness is the way. The Buddha nature is the way. The universal homo universalis. When that awakens within us, and all the great teachings have taught that. You may notice I don't have glasses on anymore. On Thursday morning, I had that last cataract surgery by this miraculous Dr. Mitchell. And when I saw him afterwards, I started to cry. I said, I save souls, but you help the blind see. Oh, my God. And I'm crying. And I went up to him, and tears are coming down, and I'm hugging him. And he thought that was rather inappropriate. And I start to wipe my eye, and he screamed at me. And so I have to carry this with me because I've got these lenses in my eyes that see things differently. I still have a difficult time reading, so I did get a little pair of readers, and I'll attempt to read today if I can. But it's like a whole new life. It's like being born again. I can see clearly now. The man that I've been with almost 50 years, he says, I don't know who I'm looking at anymore. You need to get some glasses to cover up that face of yours. I've been wearing them since I was 3 years old. Now all of a sudden I'm, you know, I like it. Michael said I look like James Bond. I said, which one? There's so many of them. I'm old enough to remember the first one in the 60s. Yeah. So what if life is this beautiful gift? And Richard Rohr, this wonderful Christian, is helping me heal my issues around the toxic religion that I was raised in. And it's very important to translate that in a new way, you know? Mark Nepo, in his wonderful book, The Endless Practice, he talks about a chapter. It's called Understanding the Weave. And when I wrote the talk titles 2 months ago, he inspired me with that little chapter. He said, it's very important to understand the weave of life that we're living in. So if we have a Judeo-Christian culture, which is what we do, it's important to understand the weave of Christianity, what it was really saying. I've taught the metaphysical Bible so many times, and you need to, it's like lifting the veil. What was really being said in the Bible? When I was being prepped for surgery, the two nurses that were there, they thought, I'm such a charming man, and you know, and I, anyway, they, what do you do for a living? And I mentioned that I was a minister. And they said, are you a Christian minister? I said, well, kind of, sort of, but more universal truth. Do you use the Bible? And I realized, they're prepping me for surgery. Maybe I best back away and not say too much. Just be careful what you say. I will be gentle with my words, so I do not screw this up. And but I realized it isn't a conversation that does need to be happened. So Mark Nepo, he talks about the two great sins in life, and one of them he calls the sin of literalism, where you take the Bible literally, you know, like Adam and Eve was the fall of man, and forever then he has to have the blood of Jesus to save him. This is the stuff that you're taught, when in truth, the story of Adam and Eve was an allegory about consciousness, how we are born pure, like a newborn baby child. We're born in Eden, a consciousness of wholeness, that hidden wholeness that is our true nature. And then we eat from the tree of judgment. We start calling this good or bad. It's called duplicitous thinking. It's called the local mind gets conditioned, and she knows what I'm talking about, and it has a very narrow way of seeing it. These are the bad people, and these are the good people, and that literalism can get you trapped in what Richard Rohr calls a kindergarten religion. And he says the second great sin is what he calls imposition. Once you take things literally and you think your way is the only way, you want to impose it on other people. Now, I've been to several parliaments of the world religion. The first one was 1893. I wasn't quite at that one, but I was at the one in 1993, and it was in Chicago. And all the world's religions are showing up at the Palmer Hotel that were there 100 years ago. The Zoroastrians were there. The Sikhs were there. The Buddhists were there. The Christians were picketing all around the parliament. And they had their little magazines with the blood of Jesus, and this is the only way, imposing this is the way that you have to follow if you want to be, quote, saved. Well, you don't need to be saved because you're not lost. And so something happens. Sometimes it has to be a quantum thing, Ashley, for us to say, that dog don't hunt no more. You know, I'm going to choose a spiritual path that feeds my soul. And at this stage of life, having done ministry for 30 years, I only want to teach classes that feed my soul.
that are the evolutionary classes that Dr. Holmes talked about. He talks about involution and evolution, and that we are here to evolve as a species. Barbara Marx Hubbard talked about Homo universalis. We have to become a new order of being if we are going to save this planet. Now, you can look out there and you can see so many people who aren't willing to evolve, who aren't willing to grow. I remember when I first came to this Science of Mind teaching many years ago, one of the flaws it had, and it's an evolving organization, was that it condemned kind of the psychological approach. They went strictly to spirit, and Jan was seeing her therapist at the time. And of course, I was the kind of religious scientist that would put whipped cream on a pile of doo-doo and deny that it had any importance, and I was a master of repression. Now, what I've learned through the grace of being 30 years in this, you cannot repress that stuff because it just starts to stink. It starts to come up, and it seeps through that clear mind that you think you have, and that's called subconscious repression. So in my evolution, I studied people like Mark Nepo and Locke Kelly coming out of the Buddhist tradition, and they talk about three stages. They talk first, it's a waking up stage. You know, the Buddha means the one that awoke. So it's not that you awaken. It's that this presence, and Shay did a beautiful expose on it this morning, there's something within us that's already awake, and it starts to flower within us. It flowered within Ashley, says, oh my God, I'm getting out of this place. It's not feeding my soul. I need a truth that embraces all people and doesn't condemn people of different religions or different colors or different sexual orientations. We have beautiful Mia here, a trans. I'm so proud of you for having the courage in Moulton, Alabama, to stand up and be seen. You know, at one of our revealing services, this man was raised in the South in a Baptist church, and he was a gay man. And he said, and when the preacher would rail against the gays, he would stand up in the middle of the audience. And if you're going to condemn them, well, you're going to look at me when you condemn them. I thought, what a courageous man that was. So the willingness to be seen at a time when I was raised in a culture you have to hide. You have to hide the truth because the truth is too controversial. I'm from South Dakota, and when my mother would be asked about me, Tia's going to her 50th high school reunion, they asked what happened to me. I was valedictorian. They expected big things of me. My mother would say, it's none of their business what happened to you. And I said, Mom, it sounds like you're ashamed to tell them I'm a minister. Then I'd have to explain that crazy religion you're in, and I just don't want to do it. And I said, okay, Mom, I got it. So you live your life hiding from the truth of your being until you can't hide anymore. It's too painful to hide, and you have to be true to yourself. So the first stage is waking up, but it's this presence that wakes up. It's that something in us that says, I'm not going to abide in a lesser than religion. I loved when Terry stood up to her mom and said, I am not going to worship a God that would kill everybody on the planet and then give us a rainbow. I said, you must be my child, because I said the same thing. Oh, come on. Grow up, evolve. So something wakes up and you can't take it anymore. And then the second phase is the waking in phase. That's where the work really happens. That's what Jan showed me. You have to be willing to meet Little Miss Afraid. You have to meet all those sub-personalities that are repressed, that are screwed up, that are afraid, that are sad. And they hold the gold, the willingness to go into the sadness. You know, it's when Ellen Morgan lost her husband, Ernie, she asked me to read the thing about grief. And she said, grief can only be known when joy is present. They go together. So if I can really enter into my grief, I can find the joy that's underneath it all. And then the last phase, which is what we have to come to as a species, it's called waking out. Waking out into the world where we are each other, that everyone is you. There's nothing that isn't you. Somebody sent me a text, and I don't know who it was, one of you. All I saw was a phone number, and it said, I'm with you when you have your surgery. And whoever that person was, I said, thank you. And they sent me a hot little smiley face. And then that same person, who I don't know, sent me a video and said, I thought you might find this interesting. So I clicked on this video, and the video was a scientist doing a TED Talk. And the TED Talk was from a woman talking about grief. And it's about, do animals grieve? And it was it you, Michael, that sent me that? That was so amazing. A scientist sending me this thing about, do animals grieve? And so she started off talking about an orca whale. And the whale had a name, and they'd been studying her for many years. And for 17 years, she hadn't... Oh, it takes 17 months to carry a baby whale to fruition. And so they watched her the scientists, and when the baby was born, it was born dead. And the mother would not let the baby go. So she carried that baby for 1,000 miles for 17 days on her back. And after 17 days, she finally released it. So then he tells the story of the ducks, the two ducks that were in a foie gras factory. I guess that's where they take the liver of the duck and cut it up and serve it to people. So these two ducks were refugees from a foie gras factory, and they were taken to a sanctuary where they could live out their older years together. Two boy ducks from different kind of duck world. And they were so bonded, kind of like you are with Al. They were just the best buddies. And when the one duck died, the other duck couldn't get over the death of his friend, and he died shortly after because they were so connected. Then she talked about the refuge for the old donkey that went there and had no friends, and he found the old horse, and the horse was 32, and when the horse died, the donkey stood at the grave and was pawing the grave. And then, of course, they did the elephant story. She did one after the other. The elephant, when the elephant collapsed, it tried to make the elephant stand, and when it finally collapsed and died, the elephant wailed and moaned and rocked and rocked. So she said, as a scientist, you are told not to anthropomorphize. That means don't make an animal human. They're animals. And because we could just call them animals, then we can treat them the way animals are treated. But if, for some reason, you waken out and you realize they're sentient beings, and they actually grieve and they actually feel, she says, can you imagine what kind of a world we would be if we saw things with different eyes? So the first month, the first week on this series, I'm talking about the keys to going home. And it's very interesting, my Zen calendar, Paul and I have the same Zen calendar. Yesterday it said, what if existence is where we're isolated, but it's in nothingness that we come home? What if we could realize that we are the space of God, and the space of God then exists within the face of God, but we've identified with the object, with the face, with the being, with existence, and what we are is the nothingness out of which existence comes. It's a whole different way of seeing things. So then seeing through the eyes of the wave, I'm a very special little wave on the ocean of life, we begin to see things through the eyes of the ocean. Oh my God, I'm the ocean of life appearing as this incarnation. Locke Kelly, he loves a beautiful little metaphor. And remember, Jesus spoke in metaphors because he said they don't understand. So Locke Kelly used this wonderful metaphor. He said, I used to think of myself as this beautiful, white, fluffy cloud. And my job was to keep the cloud nice and clean, not to have dark thoughts, but have positive thoughts and just float through life. And then one day I fell out of the cloud and went, holy cow, I'm the sky. I'm the sky. Different way of seeing things. So if we meet in the sky, if we meet in the love, not the attached love, not the cathecting love, not mine and your kind of love, not the love that doesn't want things and wants other things. That's that kind of path of suffering that Buddha talked about. I don't want this and I want this. That's the path of suffering. What if it's a love that embraces all things? Embraces the sadness when we have those moments of sadness, those beautiful moments of grief. You know, I remember we were watching Gangaji once in our satsangs, and a woman was drowning in grief. And so she said to the woman, I think she'd lost her dog and maybe her husband and her sister all within a short period of time. And she said, I'm drowning. And she said, would you be willing to go into that grief? And she said, don't tell a story about it. Just go into it. And the moment that woman went into the grief, she says, what are you feeling right now? And through her choked tears, she said, I'm feeling the love. You know? I remember Tia, her little son Josh, every time she would talk about him, tears would come up. But we can talk about him now because the love that he is still there. The willingness to meet whatever that is, if it's sadness, if it's grief, if it's fear, it's not about casting out the fear. It's about embracing the fear. Baby Speck was my great teacher with that. She was the most fearful little dog. And I couldn't cast out her fear, but I could embrace the fear. So we just finished a class. It's the Parker Palmer class, On the Brink of Everything. I'm lifting up books and I'm not opening them because I'm afraid I can't read. But I will try. But what I loved about Parker Palmer, he's 79, and he titled this book From a Little Baby. And the little baby, the mother said, she's on the brink of everything. Everything, every moment is special. And he said, at 79, I'm like that baby. Every moment is special. So what if we can age chronologically, but we really don't age as universal beings? Every moment is that moment where we get to say, I'm on the brink of a new life, of a new discovery. And it has to be fresh. You know, they say you can't step in the stream the same time twice. So what if this stream of life that we're all swimming in is there for us to keep our head above water, to keep our vision forward, to notice who's standing on the sidelines, Ashley, and who's in that stream moving forward? At this stage of the life, this is the Hopis, they say, don't look back, keep your eyes forward. And most of all, at this stage On the spiritual path, you cannot afford to take anything personally. It's not about you taking things personally. It's not about your feelings getting hurt. And one of the first lessons I learned in Science of Mind was no one can hurt your feelings. So if your feelings are hurt, it has nothing to do with somebody out there. It has to do with a sensitivity level in here whose buttons get pushed real easily. You know, Trey's feelings got hurt when Humphrey decided to sleep on my side of the bed. He likes you better than me. I said, no, no, I just scratch his little back sides real well, and he likes a little scratch before that. Well, I think he prefers you now to me. I said, no, no, he doesn't really prefer me. Don't get your feelings hurt, because Humphrey likes me too. There's a capacity. It's about seeing with a different kind of mind. Back to Mark Nepo. He talks about the different kind of mind that we need. God, I could almost see it without my glasses. Should I try it? No. It's kind of, here's the readers. Do they look okay? Okay. This is the kind of mind that you need, according to Mark Nepo. It's called an open mind. He says, the mind is not a storeroom with mirrors where we retreat to convince ourselves that we exist. He said, the mind, rather, is a living room with windows and more than one chair so that friends can come and look out and discuss what they see. It's not a fortress where we frisk and strip others of what they believe in order that we get to share our truth with them. Ashley knows what I'm talking about. More, it's a porch where bird feeders and coffee and tea and the greeting of hello, and you can share your story and your truth, and all is welcome. So he says, pull the curtains, open the windows, brew the coffee, and put out a sign, other views are wanted here. Other views are wanted here. We're open to the diversity. You know, if you've done any traveling, and I've done quite a bit of it, like the Muslim countries, the Muslim people are so beautiful. When they see you, they always touch their heart and they bow to you. And they recognize within their tradition that a stranger could be an angel coming to be entertained. So we have these stereotypes that we make of people, and we don't even know who they are. You know, I go to Colorado, and there's this beautiful man who leads our evening. What is it called, Jody? A Seder? He leaves our Friday night Seders, and he teaches Hebrew at the university in Boulder. And he's probably one of the most beautiful human beings, and it's all steeped in the Jewish tradition. And he translates the Hebrew words. And you know, when we light the candle, he invites each one of us to light a candle and set an intention to send it out in the universe. And if you're an empath like me, and you feel the intentions rippling out, it's truly a spiritual experience. Now, do I sit there and say, do you accept Jesus as your personal savior? Hell, he's more Messiah-esque than most people that I know, because he's living in that vibration of this ancient teaching that is on fire within him. So what if in our getting, understanding, it's about, like Mark Nepo said, letting our mind not be closed, but our mind be open. And I liken that chant that you sing, and unfold your heart. The heart unfolds when it's not afraid to feel again. You know, When Mia was sharing her story, I can't help it, tears came to my eyes. I can't not feel what other people share. I mean, I think that's a gift. You know, that sensitive nature, that if someone is sharing me their story, and so what if we're here to, as we waken out into the world, the compassionate heart awakens so that it can have tenderness, so that it can not only be gentle with myself, but be gentle with the world, be gentle with the plants, be gentle with the planet. You know, we have fires now in the rainforest of Brazil. And it's, some people say, well, let's clear all the land so we can farm it. But, you know, the air that we breathe could be affected by this. When are we going to awaken as a species, you know, to how we need each other to serve this greater something? So let's see, what I was going to do with this? Back into taking the Bible literally. I've asked, are you going to do the Kingdom of God at the end? Oh, you're not. Okay. Well, I asked him to do a song. He's not going to do it. And it was about the... I was going to weave it into the sermon, but it was about the Kingdom of God. It's a Gary Floyd song. The Kingdom of God is within you. It's not a place you get into somewhere out there, but it's something that exists right within you. And, you know, in studying the Bible, one of the great teachers is Rocco Errico. He's teacher of the Aramaic version of the Bible, because that's the language Jesus wrote in. And he said Jesus never talked about being saved. His message was the message of the kingdom. That's his whole message in the Bible. And the word for kingdom that he used, we're making sense out of this stuff that didn't make sense, seeing it with new eyes. He says the kingdom, the word for that was Malkutha. And Malkutha means, this word that Jesus used, it means the sovereign counsel of God that awakens within you. So what if, he says, seek ye first the kingdom, and everything is added. So he's saying, seek ye first this inner guidance system, this sovereign voice that Terry found when she was 12 years old, of God within you. That's what we're all seeking, to see with new eyes that we're not seeking the world's. We have to find the kingdom within ourselves. And he was the template. He was the example that was showing the way. The second week, I talked about living an authentic life. And one of the books I was thinking of teaching, because it's the 25th anniversary, was Seed of the Soul by Gary Zukav. And he talked about living an authentic life. And the authentic life that we're all here to live is the life of our soul, because our soul is an eternal being that's been here for incarnation after incarnation after incarnation, hopefully to get it right in one of these incarnations. So if you're not getting it right, good news is you get to come back and do it again and again and again. But what if we get to evolve so that, I don't know, so that we're honoring those lifetimes, we're honoring the ancestors, that we're being a part of the solution on this planet. We're the bodhisattvas. We're the awakened ones that are helping awaken others to this interconnectedness. You know, that we're better together than alone, that we're not separate, that we need the diversity so that we can flower. And last week, the talk was all about making space for more, making space in you so that a beginner's mind, it's not about having the answers anymore. It's about living in the questions. How can I be the best mom now that I got teenage kids, right? How can I not go passive aggressive when they do something that I, you know, ask those questions. At the end of the Parker Palmer book, he asks one simple question. And the class is basically an open-ended inquiry. And the question he asks is, how can I embrace the wholeness of my life just where it is? And we went from person to person to person. Every one of us does that differently. Now, when you embrace the wholeness of your life, that means the parts that aren't working so well, the places where you struggle, the conflicts that you have. Gina was so transparent about her own control issues. So how can I embrace my own control freak issues and know that, he thinks he has control when he has no control? You know, that was my big issue too, was control. And you know how I know it? Because I couldn't stand to be controlled by others. So when you find that your growing edge, the very thing that creates the suffering, in owning it, I had to say, I'm a control freak. Oh boy, did that push all my buttons. And by saying that, then I could say, how? But could I embrace the control freak and tell him, you think you have control, but really you don't have any control. Ask Humphrey about that. You know, ask Bert about that. They know that you have no control. And so they sit and they look at me and they say, you know, you who have no control, we want a treat. And I go, oh, aren't you cute? Of course, don't tell Daddy, but here's a treat. He says, you feed them too much. I have no control. They look at me with those beautiful eyes. And I told Jake that Bert was originally a Jake, but it was too sexy of a name for him. So we made him a Bert. What the name changes. You know, that's true for the Bible. When the name changes, the nature changes. So Abram became Abraham. They put an ah in there. It means he was infused with God. Jacob became Israel. Jacob was the supplanter. You know, Jacob was all mental. And when he had the battle with the angels, it's all an allegory. And the angel of the Lord going up and down on the ladder. And Jacob says, I will not release thee until thou blesses me. And so the angel blessed him and his nature changed. He became Israel. All of a sudden his heart opened and he shifted. So what if they're showing us through these allegories that we're here to evolve and shift, to put a little God into our lives? So back to Mark Nepo, he says the two sins are literalism, taking everything literal, and imposition, trying to impose our beliefs, our structure, our politics, our whatever, on the world, thinking that we're the only way. And then he says, but there are two blessings. So we'll give you the sins, but he says there are two blessings. The two blessings, one is called shimmer. Don't you love abstract things like that? That everything shimmers with the presence of God. Everything. And the second is the blessing of inlet. Could I be an opening to that shimmering, to that presence, to that gentleness? You know, Glory G did a beautiful shamanic journey this last Wednesday in satsang. The satsangs are very experiential. And in that journey, you, in a way, you suspend the logical mind and you're willing to go within. And within is that kingdom of God that's within you. You know, it's not a place you slip into. It's a place where there's revelation, because you're going past the crust of the known mind into the vast oceanic space of the subconscious mind. Now, sometimes what comes up from that subconscious mind, if you want to understand the mind, it's kind of like an iceberg. The little tip that sits above the water is your conscious mind, but 80% is underneath. That's your subconscious mind. And remember, the iceberg is made out of water. So you're really the ocean, but you think you're an iceberg. There's a metaphor. Don't take it literally. Literalism is the trap. It's the sin. It's a metaphor. So by just going underneath the top part, we go into this subconscious mind. And then the imagination, the intuition, the insights, they begin to happen from that place we know not of. And you're not supposed to know it because it's the unknown. And it's offering its counsel, its guidance. But you have to be willing to listen, to deeply listen. And the most amazing things, it just like Jack said to me when her little nine-year-old was seeing things. And he said to me, David, I see things in symbols. That's the language of the subconscious. It doesn't speak a language of words. So could we be open to the symbols? So Glorigy took us into the garden of our soul last Wednesday night. And it's very interesting. Everybody that shared had a different garden. And when I went into the garden of my soul, you would have thought that I would have every flower on the planet and it would have been highly designed. There wasn't a flower or plant there. Greg can appreciate this. I think I was on the cliffs of Dominica. And there was the rustic cliffs with the ocean and the things. There wasn't one thing cultivated. And yet my soul was so thrilled that it was so vast and so... And when she invited our spirit animal to come in, my spirit animal has long time been the penguin. But baby Speck, because she was a chaperone of the satsangs, she demanded, I am going to be there in this satsang journey. And every time you do it in that room. So there she was with the penguin, and the two of us were heading into the garden. And so when she invited our spirit animals to show us, the penguin got up on one of those cliffs and started just playing. And then Speck started jumping in the water. And they were just showing me that in this garden called life, we're here to have fun. And a woman who came for the very first time named Rosa, she's, I think, from Latin America. At the end, Glory G takes us out of the journey and says, now it's time to go back. So say goodbye to your spirit animal. Say goodbye to your garden. And all of a sudden, wailing came out of Rosa. She did not want to leave this beautiful place. So Glory G's holding her and stroking her. Because you have to go back to the world. The dog-eat-dog world. You've just been in paradise with your penguin and your pup. And now you're, and of course, being the empath, tears are coming down my face because I didn't want to say goodbye to the baby. And she said to me, I'm always here. I'm always here. So what if understanding the weave is to understand that there's more to it than the outer, that there's this invisible something that is as real and as alive as it ever been, you know? And when you get to be my age, we get to tune into that. How many of you had your parents or grandparents that are on the other side? Do you feel their presence with you? I mean, I feel them all the time. And it's in a positive way, because it's kind of an encouragement, you know, we're talking about your grandmother, the shadow side as well as the light. And to see them with really objective eyes, not making them saints, because I had a very prejudiced grandmother who was the matriarch of our whole family, and she had her issues. But yet I grew up to love her because she made wonderful donuts. And she would hold me in her big, big, expansive Norwegian arms. But she had all her judgments and all her things. She probably went to the same church you went to, Ashley. And yet I love this woman. So what if we understand the weave by having compassion and gentleness for the allness of those things? Parker Palmer talks about poetry as the language of the soul. Throughout the book, he shares his poetry, and he does the inquiry, how can I understand the weave of life at 79 better? And the first thing he said is, I seek to be around younger people. Every time your kids come to the center, I just want to feast off their wisdom, their depth. Her little girl said, she was driving to the center, and she said, Mom, I love that song, Imagine No Religion, I Wonder If You Can. I thought, ah. And they thanked their mother for not subjecting them to the same fakakta religion that Ashley had to go through. They said, Mom, thank you for not doing that. So they can say, imagine no religion, I wonder if you can. And then a spirituality can be fresh. So Parker Palmer at 79 says, always hang around younger people because they have a fresh way of seeing things. The second thing he says is, allow yourself to let nature teach you. You know, nature is the thinnest veil of spirit. We all know that out there is the medicine. The medicine of a tree, the medicine of a rock, the medicine of a flower. You know, go and smell Remy. This witch from Salem gave him, I think it's Eau de Rose, but it's just that's the fragrance, and it's the flower, the rose, the ointment of the rose. You know, it does smell great. So what if all this is teaching to us? So Parker Palmer, let's get out the readers. This is new for me. Then it's like twisting on a microscope. You got to kind of focus in there. This is his, and his third thing was go into the wilderness. Jody knows what wilderness is. There's something incredibly powerful. And learn to listen to what the wilderness is saying. So here's this waking out phase from Parker Palmer to understand the weave. Go into a forest, and here's what he says. It's a slow way. I will only go as fast as the slowest part of me. Let these woods have their slow way with you. Patient pines that hold their green through all the frozen seasons, and lichen-covered rocks that live indifferent to time's passage. These will teach you how to bring your life to the earth. Bring your life to the ground. And he says, the fractal chaos of the forest floor, its white anemones, its spiked grasses and dead leaves, the fallen trunks and the branches that are splayed out like pickup sticks. These will teach you how to live freely, with abandon, and feed the roots of new growth when your time has come. To feed the roots of new growth. You know, we go for walks on Manisano, and Trey and I decided to, for the auction, rent a cabin, cabin 10 or 11 are our favorites, with this incredible view. They were built in the 1930s by the Civilian Conservation Corps. That's when FDR put Americans to work in the Depression, and that beautiful park is built from that. And we go for long walks up there, and it's just like he described, it's like virgin land. The trees that fall over are just lying where they fall. The old rocks, the original stones are there with the lichen, and nobody rakes the leaves or the grass. And the dogs are in heaven. Now, why are the dogs in heaven when we go on those paths? They must know something that we humans, it's not a manicured landscape. It's totally wild and free. So what if, like he says, as we awaken out into the world is teaching us how to let go of our seriosity, how to let go of our stories that oftentimes become the cages in which we suffer, to understand that it's really never been about you. It's always been about this life wanting to flower in you. And when our willingness to shed this false idea of ourselves goes away, then we understand things more clearly. In the opening treatment, I invited you to take a deep breath in. And then as you exhale, to let go of everything that you're carrying around. You know, it's just a symbolic letting go. And then if you notice, once you let go of whatever it is you're carrying around, my concern, my worry, my story, my things that I have to do, once that just lets go, there's a space that's created. And then you can become an inlet. Remember the blessing of inlet. An inlet for the grace of whatever wants to come in. Maybe it's like Seamus, his favorite prayer is, wow. Or he says, wow, I'm filled with so much gratitude. After the heart attack, I couldn't stop telling people that I loved them because I realized that I hadn't shared that I loved them. And the heart attack was like this doorway or this inlet. I can't keep that quiet anymore. And so And if you go to a Circle of Love gathering, you'll get stuck with that same thing. You'll go to the TSA and be hugging everybody there. It's just what happens. Once it comes in, it needs to flow. And then you realize, wow, what if that's what it's always been about? To being an inlet and an outlet for that something. And the message is always there. I'm a big student of Emerson, and Emerson would say, be and not seem. You know, be the authentic self. Be the nothingness. Be the emptiness dancing. Be and not seem. It's not who you appear to be that's really important. The masks that you wear, the labels that you have. To be this authentic, eternal soul. Be and not seem. And then he said, let us acquiesce. Let us surrender. Let us open. And you know when surrender happens? Surrender happens when you're not there. Because you don't really even exist. My favorite Zen saying is, you know why you're so miserable? Because 99.9% of the things that you complain about are all about you, and you're not. Let those who have ears to hear. So what if, in that acquiescence, in that surrendering, we let go of me with my story, my level of suffering, and then he says we get our bloated nothingness out of the way. That's a very sweet way of And then he says, then you connect with the divine circuits. Now, what that implies, and the understanding that I have, is the divine circuits are already there. But we get to tune into them. They've always been there. It's not something you get when you die and you go to heaven. Heaven's right now. That's what Jesus was saying. And so, you know, Richard Rohr said, Jesus was giving us the example of how to live through his life. You have to be willing to die to this false sense of self so that true nature can resurrect. It's not about a man 2,000 years ago. It's never been about him. He's showing us the way. The things that I do, you too shall do, and greater. That's the greatest honoring of the Christ, is to let that Christ presence awaken within you. The Christification of humanity. Wouldn't it be nice if the Baptist churches were teaching that on Sunday mornings, where gays and trans and every color and every religion was invited? The only sin is the sin of forgetting the truth of who you are. And who you are is this divine presence. So thank you, Parker Palmer. You've been wonderful. And let's just stop long enough to understand. You know, on the Sphinx, there's the phrase, know thyself. And so we come here to know the self within the self. It's the same self. And if you're hearing this from that same self, it's the self seeing the self. It's self-recognition, self-realization. And the self only sees the self. As Ernest Holmes would say, love sees only love, and only love sees love. And so as we take that breath and we exhale all that stuff about me and my struggles and my story, and it just goes out like the breath has a way of going out, then through divine grace and wholeness, there's an in-breath that comes. And we get to choose on that in-breath if we're going to allow this nurturing presence, this grace, this gratitude, a sense of okayness with life just as it is, to come in with this next breath. And then as we exhale, we let go of the mind that thinks it has all the answers, and we discover there's a beginner's mind that's beginning to awaken within us, that wants to see clearly. It's kind of like the cataracts was all this clouded way of thinking. And as they blew all those cataracts away and then they sucked them out, they put in this special lens, and this lens can see clearly where David wasn't seeing before. What if it's that way on the spiritual path? There's something in me that sees clearly now, that it's never been about what I thought it was. It's always been about this presence awakening within each one of us, and it is doing so right now. So we get to tell ourselves, I will be gentle with myself. I will be gentle with myself. I will be tender with my heart. And I will only go as fast as the slowest part of me is ready to go. And in that, there's a flowering of the presence. And we understand the weave of life, the tapestry of life, when all threads are welcome. All threads, all the different kinds of threads. And we have a mind more like a living room where we open the windows and the shutters and we look out together and we share from that tender, open heart. We see things in a whole new way because we're no longer bound by the literalism and the imposition of those around us that would have us think the way they think. With so much gratitude for this ever unfolding understanding of the truth that reveals itself when we are ready. We say yes, 1,000 times yes. And the discoveries are quantum. Every song, when Remy sings in a few minutes, it will awaken something in the heart, because that's what happens when the awakening is happening. Jesus called it the yeasting of the bread. The kingdom of heaven is like the yeast, the leaven in the bread. It begins to leaven within us this truth, this liveness, this realization that's always happening. And we are tuning into it. So stay tuned in. You ain't seen nothing yet. What's new?
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new world.